Okay. Greetings. Thank you so much, George. Thank you, Caroline. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, everyone at Sangha Live, for holding this space and inviting us all to be here together. What a gift to have some time to practice in these troubled times. My name is Oren J. Sofer. If we haven't met, it's a real pleasure to be here together. I'm speaking to you from the ancestral lands of the Ohlone and Muwikma tribes in California, a town currently known as El Cerrito at my home. So as George said, we'll do a little bit of meditation together. I'll offer some reflections and then we'll have some time for questions and discussion. But just as we begin, I want to just acknowledge the ongoing war in Ukraine and Russia right now, and how heavy I think that has been for so many of us. I know it's been weighing on my mind and my heart. And some of our session will be devoted to exploring how we can be in right relationship with world events like this, how we can find the strength and the balance to stay connected without getting overwhelmed, and to respond with wisdom and love in ways that are useful. So, if you haven't already, I invite you to turn off any notifications on your device so that we don't get interrupted. I've done the same here. And then go ahead and find a comfortable posture. So take a few moments to just check in with your body. See what your body needs to feel at ease, stable, and balanced. So whether you're sitting as I am, standing or reclining, just let your body do what it wants to do. Bodies have their own intelligence. They know where they are in space. They understand balance, alignment, pressure, lengthening, relaxation. So just kind of starting to feel into the tissues of your body, the sense of alignment in your skeletal structure. Letting things come into balance on their own. You might take a deep breath or two if that's supportive as a way of settling and arriving. You know, it often helps me. And then as we enter a period of meditation, the invitation is either to close your eyes, if that feels comfortable, or just to lower your gaze. You can kind of gaze down at the ground about 5 or 6 feet in front of you. And the idea here is that we're turning the volume down on some of the input coming in from the world so that we can pay more attention to what's happening inside. And so as you do that, just notice how does it feel to begin to connect with your inner world? Sensations in your body, the feelings or emotions in your heart, thoughts that are present. There's a whole range of experience we can have as human beings. And sometimes it can be quite uncomfortable or difficult inside. And if that's the case, we don't want to push. Now, meditation is about being aware, developing balance and kindness. And so if it's too difficult to be present with what's inside, then it's more important to find something outside to be present with as a way of beginning to introduce and highlight these qualities of awareness, balance, and kindness. So trust yourself. What's supportive for you? Turning your attention inwards, maybe feeling the ground beneath you. We're continuing to stay connected to the space around you, noticing what you see and what you hear as a way of coming into presence. One isn't better than the other. You might feel your feet on the floor, the chair, the ground beneath you. See if you can just notice a sense of steadiness, weight, something solid and stable beneath you. Can you begin to soften and relax inside and allow the ground to support you? So with many meditation practices, it's helpful to have a home base. Sometimes we call it an anchor or a primary object. This is just a reference point to keep coming back to as a way of cultivating presence. So for many of us, it might be the sensations of breathing. Could be the sense of your whole body sitting. Or if your interior world is challenging right now, it might just be the sounds around you. So connecting with the world through sound. So just check it out and see, where can you rest your attention right now? In a way that feels supportive, accessible, and at least a little bit easeful. But just beginning to consciously set aside thoughts of the past and the future. Bringing all of your attention into the present. So whether you're sitting, standing, or reclining, I invite you to notice your spine. This central column in the body. See if you can begin to notice any sense of clarity or vitality that comes from being aware of the alignment of your spine. When something important or interesting happens, we automatically perk up. Our spine lifts. Our ears awaken. A sense of heightened presence and awareness to our environment. So there's a natural energy to being awake and aware that we can begin to access in our body. One of the ways to notice that is by feeling your spine, becoming aware of that central column of your body. You might even imagine that the space between each of the vertebrae in your spine, starting all the way down at your sacrum, coming up through the lower lumbar, into the middle of the back, the thoracic spine, between the shoulder blades, all the way up into the neck, the base of the neck, at the base of the skull, the top of the neck there, the occipital joint, all the way up into the skull, and even sensing the space above you, above your head. Imagine that all of that space could expand just a little bit. The space between each vertebra could get a little wider. How much energy does it take to be aware? Just to be present. don't have to figure anything out. You don't have to fix something or change it. You don't have to make anything go away. Just to be aware, just to be awake. It does require energy, just a little bit. But if we try too hard, we overshoot. We miss this vibrant, fleeting moment of being alive. So we allow the body to come into a place of stillness and balance. We allow the heart and the mind to become present. And we can feel, we can notice just the subtle energy of being awake. It's a sense of vitality, alertness. So this is one aspect of the path of meditation, is to become aware, to strengthen awareness. And from this place, we can meet all kinds of experiences, different thoughts, memories, worries and concerns, different feelings and emotions, moods that pass through us. A whole range of different weather systems. We encounter all the different sensations of the body, pleasure and pain. And we learn to be aware and to find balance. To understand the nature of experience, it changes. It's not solid. It doesn't mean anything about who we are. It's not personal. This path is also about opening the heart. The more aware we become, the more we understand, the more reason we have to love. As we understand our own vulnerability and our own humanity, we deepen our connection with all of life. One of the beautiful and powerful qualities of the heart that develops through the path of meditation is the quality of compassion. a strong, wise, and caring energy. So I just invite you to begin to become aware of your heart area in the center of your chest, behind your sternum. If it helps, you can even place one hand over your heart. Just to notice how your heart's doing right now. Whether it feels open or closed, joyful or sad, sensitive or numb. Ready or tired? Capacity we have as human beings to feel, to care. So compassion is a protective energy. It's a willingness to be with pain and suffering, to actually turn towards it, to hold it, not to become overwhelmed by it, not to drown in it, not to become filled with sorrow by it, but to hold it with tenderness, strength, and understanding. This is the power of compassion. To meet suffering and to offer a balm, a soothing availability to heal and help. We are the first recipient of our own compassion. This energy of tenderness and care. There's space for our own pain, our own sorrow, our own fear and overwhelm. To just be acknowledged, to be held, to know that there's space for all of it. And if we can't hold it, we let the earth hold it. We let our ancestors hold it. We let the Buddha hold it. Compassion sees the suffering of others, doesn't turn away. When there's enough strength and balance inside, we can open to the pain in the world. We can hold the anguish of our brothers and sisters in the Ukraine. We can hold the fear and the terror of the soldiers on the front lines in both sides. We can hold the confusion and the ignorance of those in power. And see within all of it a seed of humanity, the tenderness of this vulnerable life, and the wish for all beings to be free from pain and suffering. Compassion stays balanced. It doesn't fall in. It doesn't pull away. It meets what is right there at the edge. It says, it's okay. I'm here and I'll do what I can to help. Allow yourself to be nourished by the strength of compassion. And offering that care outwards to those in your life and beyond in need. In your own time, when you're ready, just allowing that contemplation to fade. Coming back to the simplicity of your breath, your body, or the sounds around you. Thank you so much for your practice. So I am going to stand up for a moment and stretch my legs. I invite you to do the same if you'd like. I'm still here. I hurt my lower back last week, and so I'm trying to take really good care of it, not sit too long. Okay. So let's talk about energy. Let's talk about being human together and finding ways to make the most of this life. I was looking back over some notes and quotes from various teachers about violence, war, and nonviolence this week, thinking about what's happening in the Ukraine. And I came across this one phrase from Thich Nhat Hanh that has stayed with me this week, where he's talking about the power of our meditation practice to help the world and to be a force for good and for peace. And he said, just very simply, meditation is to be aware and to try to help. It's so simple. He's capturing there, just in that one sentence, these two kind of core intentions and developments in the path to awakening: the development of wisdom, meditation is to be aware, and the development of compassion and to try to help. The clearer we are inside, the more balanced we are, the more we can help, right? If we're flooded, if we're overwhelmed, if we're exhausted, when we're consumed by our own pain or reactivity, it's very difficult to contribute to the world. So we need to bring wisdom to our relationship with others in the world. Sometimes we need to step back. Sometimes we need to take a break in order to attend to what's happening here, to stay balanced, to get clear. Because if we're not, we have less to offer. But in those times that we withdraw, we turn the news off, we go on retreat, we take a day and we do a digital detox, we don't talk to others, and we rest or contemplate. In those times, in those moments, the intention is always to replenish our stores so that we can offer our compassion and love to the world. It's not to escape. So we respond where and when we can. I know many of us all over the world have been donating to some of the organizations on the ground, providing support, medical supplies, refuge, housing to those affected by the war. And then there are ways that we can't help. There are ways that we experience our own powerlessness in the face of really immense forces in our world, like war. But that doesn't mean we can't practice. These are the places where we practice equanimity, this deep understanding and poise in the heart that has a much wider perspective on what it is to be alive and to be human. We practice compassion. Not shutting down, staying open, staying connected, staying available. We practice nonviolence, not demonizing and separating or creating an other in our mind, but beginning to take that radical step of actually living the principles that we would like to see in this world. Principles of love, harmony, generosity, compassion, nonviolence. It's a very radical act to say, I'm going to live in a way that I want the world to be. and to just begin to create that in ourselves, in our communities, in our relationships. So one of the fundamental capacities that we have as human beings that's essential for all of this that I've been talking about is energy. Everything takes energy. So understanding what energy is and how we use it is essential for living a wise and meaningful life and for making progress on the spiritual path. So energy is the fuel of life. It's literally the kilocalories that our body creates by consuming and burning food. It's the energy of the sun that gets stored in plants through photosynthesis, and the animals that eat the plants and the food that we consume that then gets released and converted in our own body. So the very vibrations of my voice that you're hearing are the energy of the sun. The screen and the electricity that's allowing us to be here together was at some point the energy of the sun getting stored, whether it's been through wind, solar, or fossil fuel. It's a line from I think it's a Derek Walcott poem. He says, "We live in an old chaos of the sun." I love that. We live in an old chaos of the sun. All, just think about it. All of the energy, all of the life on this planet. This light, this heat, this energy from the sun. Expressing itself through the play of life. Energy is not just physical, it's also mental and emotional. It takes energy to feel emotions, to laugh, to cry. It takes energy to avoid emotions, to try to contain or suppress them. It takes energy to think, to plan, to worry. Everything we do takes energy. From our basic daily tasks of getting up, moving around, eating, to all that we do with our mind and our heart. So if we want to use and understand energy more wisely in the service of our values, in the service of awakening, in service of living in a world based on dignity, harmony, equity, real peace, positive peace, healthy peace. We need to start to understand the habits that govern our energy, how we're actually using this precious life resource that only diminishes with time after a certain point, right? Somewhere around 24, right? Between like 18 and 25 for most of us, we hit this peak and then very slowly at first, but the more time goes on, the more we start, oh, I don't quite have the same energy I used to. So one of the things to understand that has been very helpful for me in learning about energy is the context that we are all living in the modern era and the cultural habits that inform our own experience. Or was it Wallace Stevens? Thank you, Sam. It wasn't Derek Walcott. Wallace Stevens. Appreciate that. It was over 20 years ago that I read that poem. So the habits that govern our use of energy that are informed by our society and the patterns and economy and institutions of our society. So what are some of those patterns? Just invite you to take a moment here. If we were all sitting together in a room, I would take a few hands. But just reflect on it. What are some of the patterns embedded in the dominant culture? where you live about how we use energy. Efficiency, individualism, end justifies the means. Right? These are some of the trends. Our whole world at this point. I'm gonna back that up a little bit. Many of the places in our world still to this day are powered on a fossil fuel economy. Some countries and communities are making or have made the shift to more renewable energy, thankfully. As a whole, human society is still powered by a fossil fuel economy. What does that do to how we experience energy as human beings? Just think about what fossil fuel is, right? It's this very, very powerful, ancient, compact source of energy. What do we do with it? We burn it. It explodes and it releases so much energy in a very short period of time and with a certain cost, right? There's an impact, there's a byproduct. What I found in myself, and I invite you to check it out and see if it's true for you, is that my own use of my life energy has been shaped and formed by our economy and by fossil fuel, by that template, to use up a lot of energy in this kind of explosion of force, overriding my natural limits. And then afterwards to feel this kind of residue, this pollution of my own mind and body. There's a coffee shop on every corner of every major city in the world. Why? Why are we so over-caffeinated? Keep going, push, produce, make more, build, get better, right? These are the underlying forces and tendencies of modern society in terms of how we use our life energy. This is very different from what our biology was designed for and what it expects, which includes lots of periods of downtime, periods of very rhythmic, sustained use of energy, like walking long distances, threshing, weaving and grinding, gathering. It's a very different kind of use of energy. It's sustained, it's long-term, it's balanced. This is what our bodies come into the world expecting based on hundreds of thousands of years of evolution. I remember one moment on a retreat with Thich Nhat Hanh, who I know many of us in the meditation world have been thinking of him and speaking of him since he passed away a few weeks ago. There's one moment of insight that he offered about energy. He said, notice when you hold your toothbrush, how hard you're holding your toothbrush and how you're brushing your teeth. And I was astounded when I went to bed that night and noticed how I brushed my teeth, how much I was overexerting myself, the grip I had on my toothbrush and how quickly and forcefully I was brushing my teeth. This immense overexertion, this waste of energy. There's a book by the Zen teacher, Sherry Huber, with the title, How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Brilliant, brilliant title. When we begin to study how we use energy, we start to uncover certain patterns, certain templates of how we relate to our own life energy and to the tasks before us. So one of the patterns that I think many of us have internalized from our society is this kind of cycle of overexertion, overactivation. We push past our limits and then collapsing and burning out. And we bring this energy in to our spiritual practice. We bring it into our activism and work for social change. And it destroys us. What the Buddha taught, virya, courageous energy, is a steady, sustainable energy. It's tempered by patience, kanti. It takes the long view. It understands that this path, it's not something we do in a weekend. It's not even something we do in a year for most of us. For many of us, if you have this view, it's something that unfolds over lifetimes. And if you don't have that view, it's fine. You don't have to sign up for anything. Just think about one lifetime. It's one of the unique things about us as human beings that we can actually conceive of our own lifespan. That's remarkable, isn't it? How much time do we have left? This life energy for many of us, every day, every year, a little bit less. How do we use it? It's one of the most important choices we make. So what this path invites is a certain kind of craft to learn how to use energy in a way that is balanced and sustainable, to access a kind of energy that is renewable, that's not an explosion of force that then leaves us exhausted, but that's a steady trickle, a steady stream. There are a number of stories in the early suttas about this that can serve as a guide for us to just help get a sense of the kind of energy the Buddha was talking about. So there's the famous story of the monk Sona, who was very enthusiastic, very gung-ho about his meditation practice, and wanted to go off and practice on his own. This was very early in this monk's path, and the Buddha said, "That's probably not such a good idea, Sona. Why don't you stay here with everyone else and have the support of the community?" And he was, "I'm going to get enlightened. I'm going to do it. I have to go off." So he asked the Buddha three times, and traditionally, after you ask three times, often the Buddha will say, "Okay, fine. It's that important to you." So he goes off on his own, and he gets into this striving, overexerting himself, doing walking meditation, pushing, and it's said that he pushed and overexerted himself so much that his feet were bleeding, and he was ready to give up. "This is impossible. I can't do this. I've tried. I've exerted all my energy. I'm going to disrobe, go back to lay life, have a family. I can support the sangha and give donation, give dana, and that'll be my spiritual practice." So the Buddha, in his omniscience, in his own mind, saw what Sona was thinking, and saw that he had gotten out of balance in his use of energy, and so he appeared to Sona, and this is the story how it goes. Maybe he showed up and talked to him. We don't know. And he says, "Sona, before you went forth in the holy life, before you became a monastic in my teachings, you were a musician, weren't you?" "Yes," he played some kind of stringed instrument. A lute is how they translate it. He said, "Tell me, Sona, when your strings were tuned too tight, could you make beautiful music?" And he said, "No, if they're too tight, the music's out of tune." And he said, "And when your strings were too slack, could you make beautiful music?" He says, "No, if they're too loose, you can't really play the song." He says, "Just even so, Sona, when your strings were tuned just right, not too tight, not too loose, how was it for you?" He said, "Then I could make music. Then I could play." He says, "It's the same with this practice, Sona. Not too tight, not too loose." So it's this energy. We're not pushing. We're not contracting. We're not struggling and striving against something, forcing. But we're also not too slack. "Ah, it doesn't matter. I'll do it tomorrow. Just relax, be aware, don't worry. Well, we're actually making some effort. We're showing up. We're present. But we're not overshooting. There's another story. Somebody comes to the Buddha and asks him, he says, how did you cross the floods? This is one of the metaphors the Buddha used for the forces, the deep forces in our psyche that keep us bound to suffering. The flood of obsession with pleasure, like addiction to pleasure. The flood of addiction to the future, so-called the flood of becoming, always, always placing our sense of well-being and happiness in the future, when I get to, when I become, when I am, when I have. The flood of ignorance, confusion, of just not knowing or understanding the truth of what it is to be human. And the flood of views, a very powerful one, our fixation on being right, on knowing this is the way it is. How did you cross the floods? One step at a time, he said. When I hurried, I was swept away. But when I tarried, I sank. One step at a time, I crossed the floods. I get a little emotional just thinking about it. It's the energy to be present that is required, which means to open the heart and meet all of life. All right. So how do we do this? I always like to be really practical with these teachings because they're meant to be applied. It's wonderful to think about. It's inspiring. It's elegant. And it's meant to be lived. So how do we develop a wise use of energy? Okay, there are three main things I want to suggest here. We'll talk about each of them a little bit, and then we'll have some time for questions and discussion. So number one, begin to pay attention to what you're already doing. The movement teacher, Moshe Feldenkrais, one of the things that he said that we can learn from about this, he says, you can't do what you want to do until you know what you're already doing. You can't do what you want to do until you know what you're already doing. If we want to change a certain pattern or habit of body, of mind, of emotion, of energy, we have to become conscious of what's already set in motion, the habits that are there, in order to transform them and do something new. So how do we become aware of what we're already doing with energy? Some of it just means paying attention. Some of it is just getting curious and just noticing, like, how do I use energy in the day? Where do I have more energy? Do I burn out by 1 o'clock, right? When does my energy feel steady and stable? Oftentimes, becoming aware of the habits that we have already accrued involves doing less. So decreasing the output of energy in order to develop more sensitivity and awareness. If we have developed a habit of overexerting, of using more force and energy than is necessary, one of the effects of that is that our senses have become dulled through overriding our natural limits. So it's like our internal meter is skewed. It's very, very interesting. We don't have time to get into it too much here, but to relate it to like sensory motor processes and the way we can get misaligned in the body. So for example, just to use an analogy here, if we have some kind of an injury or something, you know, we might turn to the side here. We might be sitting, say like this, and all of you can see that I'm leaning back, right? But if I close my eyes, if I have some kind of imbalance or pattern musculoskeletally, it can feel like I'm sitting upright. My internal sense and image will be that I'm upright, but I'm actually out of alignment. So that's a physical analogy of what I'm talking about in terms of energy. It can feel internally like I'm not trying too hard. I'm not overexerting myself. But the scale by which we're measuring things has already been distorted because from so many years of overriding our limits, pushing, burning a lot of energy. I'm not saying this is necessarily true for everyone, but I'm inviting you to check it out. And one of the ways to do that is to pull back a little bit, do a little bit less, make less effort and energy, and just begin to feel what's that like? To start to develop a more sensitive capacity to notice how we use energy. Notice when you feel pressure. Notice when you're rushing. Rushing is different from moving quickly. Rushing means we're trying to get somewhere that we are not, which is impossible. We can move very quickly and still be present. It takes practice and skill. It's something I'm still working on. Notice when you're exhausted. Okay, that's feedback that there's a difference between being tired and being like exhausted, right? Where we've overexerted ourselves. Trace it back, see what was happening. Okay, so this is the first kind of dimension of learning to use energy wisely is pay attention to what you're already doing. Investigate that. Develop more sensitivity so that you can recalibrate things. Second, learn to rest. I can't emphasize this enough. What nourishes you? How do you recharge? How do you replenish? We need rest. I'm talking about everything from just basic self-care, getting enough sleep, exercising, eating well, drinking enough water, to more nuanced things like making wise choices about how much time you spend with others and how much solitude you have, which is different for each of us. But when it's out of balance, we're not using our energy well. Making sure we're having enough fun and playing. Finding meaningful ways to contribute in the world. And just allowing ourselves to have downtime whenever possible. And it's hard, I know. It's the world is set up against this. You know, people working 2 and 3 jobs and still not making ends meet. We're raising families and trying to have a practice and work in a pandemic. It's not easy. And 10 seconds with your eyes closed is possible. And you would be amazed at how much restoration there can be just by taking short moments. When you walk out of your house, it's starting to be spring here in Northern California, and the plum trees are blooming, the magnolias are blooming. Just step outside and breathe in. Just a moment of awareness and connection can replenish our heart and our spirit. This is one of my favorite quotes, one of several, from the Christian mystic and author, poet, Thomas Merton. Many of you may have heard this quote before. It's one of his more famous ones. The rush and pressure of modern life are a form, perhaps the most common form, of innate violence. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of the activist neutralizes their work for peace. It destroys the inner capacity for peace. It destroys the fruitfulness of their own work because it kills the inner root of wisdom, which makes life fruitful. So we can get caught up in this frenzy of overdoing. And then whatever it is we're doing in the world, the potency of it gets diminished because it's not coming from a balanced place. So this is the second piece, is to value rest, to learn and find ways to rest, recharge, nourish ourselves from the physical to the mental to the emotional to the spiritual. Okay, the third training here in developing a wise use of energy in our lives is learning how to recalibrate our system and feel what sustainable balanced energy is like. The models that we have, most of the models that we have are distorted. Power comes from being bigger, having more, pushing harder. Very unstable form of power, very vulnerable kind of power. Real power comes from our system, our whole organism, physically, mentally, emotionally, being organized, finding leverage points, and applying energy appropriately in the right direction. This is something that I've learned through martial arts and the internal arts of Qigong. It's like, think about picking something up. If you go to pick up something heavy, what do? You don't just bend over and lift it really quickly. It's not how I hurt my back. You squat, you get your back straight, you take a deep breath, you use leverage, you use the strong muscles in your legs, you make sure your body's aligned, right? So you don't injure yourself. If you want to push something, you get your feet balanced on the ground and you align your body so that you're pushing not just with your muscles and the arms, but with the whole force of your body. So there are a lot of lessons that we can learn from literally how we use force and energy in our body to move through space, to lift something, to pick something up, to how we use mental and emotional energy. So begin to pay attention to how you use your body. Begin to learn principles of alignment and balance. There are many ways of doing this through awareness through movement, Feldenkrais's work, martial arts, internal arts like Qigong and Tai Chi, other forms of movement like Hanasomatics, even things like Pilates and yoga teach us an embodied way of relating to alignment, balance, and energy that can then translate into other realms of our life. So this is one aspect of recalibrating our system for wise energy. Another is to learn to sustain energy throughout an activity from beginning to middle to end. So some of the best places to learn this are with really mundane physical tasks like vacuuming or sweeping, doing the dishes, making the bed, folding your laundry, cleaning the bathroom, brushing your teeth. Notice how you use energy in those kinds of activities. They're routine, they're mundane, you don't have to think, they use your body. Are you rushing, pushing to get it done? Is it like this really big burst of energy? It's like, get the dishes done, get the dishes done. You're rushing, 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 rushing. And then afterwards, you're kind of like, boom, on to the next thing. How much more quickly do you finish the dishes because you're rushing? What would it be like to actually be present? To do the dishes with awareness? I'm not suggesting that you do them so slowly that it's, you know, excruciating. But we can be present and mindful and still moving at a regular pace doing the dishes and sustain that energy evenly from the beginning to the middle to the end of the activity. When you're finished, you will feel present, you'll feel balanced, you won't feel exhausted, and will be more available to move to the next thing instead of this pattern of always toppling forward into the next thing. So, three ways of developing wise use of energy. Number one, pay attention to what you're already doing. Begin to notice and learn more about your own patterns. Number two, learn to rest, really value it. Find ways to do that that are compatible with your life setup. Number three, recalibrate your system. Learn how to stay balanced, how to feel organized internally in your own mind and body, and use energy in a sustainable way, even, continual. Now, one of the questions that comes up a lot, and this is the last thing I'll share here, is Alexander technique. Yeah, thank you. That's another great one someone put in the chat. Is how do I deal with fatigue? I'm burnt out. I'm exhausted. I have chronic fatigue. You know, I don't have energy. So just a few pointers on this because it's one of the most common questions that comes up. Number one, rest, particularly if you're burnt out, rest. Just give yourself time. Find a way to create the conditions to rest. Number two, honor the fatigue. It's there for a reason, whether it's medical, physical, mental, or emotional. Consider it a teacher. It's asking something of you. Come into relationship with it instead of pushing against it, wishing it were otherwise, and so forth. Honor the fatigue. Two other things you can do. One, focus on joy. Find things that bring joy and delight to you, whether it's watching puppy videos on YouTube or leaving a mystery gift on your neighbor's doorstep, writing a letter to an old friend, listening to a favorite song, cooking a lovely meal if you have the energy for it. Bring more joy into your life. This will bring energy. And then the last piece is rhythm. Rhythm brings energy. Those who live in places where it snows, you know, if your car gets stuck in the snow and you can't get a tow truck, you have to rock the car out, right? You give a little gas and you let it roll back, and you give a little more gas and you let it roll back. When we're stuck energetically, rhythm. Do a little bit, then rest. Do just a little bit more and then rest. A really, really small amount at first. So like if you're laid out with chronic fatigue, like just wiggle your toes and then rest. Wiggle your fingers a little and then rest. Try to wiggle your body. Take your time with it. Just bring in some rhythm and then give yourself a long period to just let it integrate and rest. And then do it again. You can use this principle on many different scales, but bringing rhythm into your mind and body can jumpstart your energy system and bring more energy flow in. Okay, that's what I wanted to share for today. Thank you so much for listening. I wanted to say again, just a thank you to Sangha Live for bringing us all together, inviting me to be here, for all that happens behind the scenes for this to occur. And again, the reminder and invitation, this is not an obligation, invitation to contribute to this amazing community so that these events can keep happening. So I think there is a link right here on the screen that you can make a donation right here. And again, this is not the intention behind this is that it can be joyful, right? That's the practice of Dana. Dana means generosity, and it's about connecting with the beauty of this and the spirit of giving in the heart. And so I'm here because I love these teachings, and I see it as part of my duty to share and pass on what I've learned from my teachers. And it's a gift. I'm like so happy to be here sharing with you. This is my gift to you. And gift giving is, it's a way of life. And so if you want to give a gift to Sangha Live and to me, you're welcome to. And if you're in a place where that would create hardship, then don't. Okay, friends, we have some time now for some questions. I see there's a few here in the chat, and not the chat, in the Q&A panel. So I'm going to turn my attention there and just see what's coming up. All right. Sophia and Brittany are asking, I'd value hearing your thoughts about how to be peace and have a peaceful and useful dialogue with people who believe in fake news and act in a harmful way at the moment. Thank you, Sophia. As you probably know, communication is one of the areas that I've given a lot of time and energy to in my own life to learn about. And so this is a very important question that's near and dear to my heart. I think given the time that we have, there's only so much I can share. So I would encourage you to, if this is an area that you want to learn more about, to seek out ways of training yourself, whether it's through my work, my book, my classes, or through other forms of communication training, because this is one of the key things that I would offer is that we can train ourselves to stay more balanced, non-reactive, peaceful in the face of triggering situations. I think a lot of the things to bear in mind here are like context. Who is this person? What's your relationship with them? Really different if this is a stranger versus a colleague versus a family member. So contemplating the context and really getting clear about what's my purpose here? How much energy am I willing and wanting to give? In general, seek to build relationship and trust before trying to change someone's mind or share your views. So one of the skills we can develop in communication is to listen for the underlying needs and values behind somebody's views and actions. It's a very rigorous practice, but it's kind of an act of compassion and wisdom to be able to hear and see underneath things that we even disagree with, a seed of shared humanity and goodness. So to offer empathy and understanding doesn't mean that we agree with someone. It means that we can see into their heart. And this is a way to build understanding in a relationship. So, I think I see things differently from you. I'm pretty sure I do, actually. But I want to understand what's important to you and where you're coming from. One of the things I'm getting when I hear you say that, you don't want any more immigrants or refugees coming into our country is that you're really concerned about safety of our community and the resources in our community, that there be enough. Are those some of the things that matter to you? So to get to the root of it. And then you can start to have a discussion about your values for safety and resources and also for compassion and inclusion. And so those would be some of the approaches I would suggest. I hope that's helpful. Okay, Rachel, I'm currently transitioning through menopause. I feel so much of my energy goes into being with and managing the physical symptoms of this. I then feel I have less capacity to offer something of value to others and feel easily exhausted with others. Can you suggest a meditation or contemplation to find balance with this? I love this question, Rachel, in part because it's not something that I have experienced or probably ever will, being in a male body. So I need to just reference, what I have experienced, but I'll just share that the caveat that you might be better off asking women who have been through menopause than asking me about it. One of the things that's really important to understand about energy is how much energy we use reacting to and resisting what's happening. And this is true whatever the cause of the symptoms we're experiencing, whether it's menopause, chronic illness, mental or emotional challenges, the resistance we feel to it, oh God, not again, or, burns up a lot of extra energy. So one area to investigate is to start to pay attention to how you are relating to the changes that are happening in your body and how it's affecting your life, and see, there are these two extremes that the Buddha talked about. And the Buddhist path is the middle path. It's a way of moving beyond these binary systems in our life. So one of the sets of binaries is, on the one hand, resisting, avoiding. So this is that like, oh God, not again, another hot flash, right? And everything's kind of tighten up or contract, or we get worried, what if? Okay, it's resisting. Actually, the what if would be the other one. So resisting, not wanting it. The other side of the binary is getting caught up with it and identifying with it, right? Like, oh God, another hot flash. Like we get kind of really, really caught up in it. We worry about it in the future. We pick it up and we get lost in it. So try to find and develop the capacity to be aware of the changes, the exhaustion, the heat. I don't know if there are different emotional changes that are present, with balance, to let all of it flow through your awareness without snagging or grabbing onto it. That will conserve a certain amount of energy. So that's the one thing that I would have to offer about it, Rachel. I hope it's helpful and good luck to you. A wonderful question and a very natural rite of passage in life. I'm just going to glance at some of the other questions here. Okay. So a couple of questions about chronic fatigue, one about trauma. Would you be willing to talk about trauma first or second hand, one's own or others, in the context of presence and energy? Yeah. So, appreciate your if it fits qualification here of the question. I think it does fit. And again, similar to the first question about like dialogue, it's such a broad topic. I'll just share like a couple of pointers. One of the definitions of trauma, as you probably know, is an experience that is overwhelming for us, or an experience that breaches the protective boundary of the self. So by definition, trauma, a traumatic event, whether it's firsthand, our own, or secondary, something someone else experienced that we're now kind of getting affected by, the initial event or events are characterized by an intensity of energy that is beyond our capacity to integrate. Okay. So in thinking about presence and energy in life, with trauma, understanding that is the first step. Trauma means really intense energy that we haven't been able to integrate. So to reestablish a sense of balance often will entail, one, reestablishing a sense of regulation and safety. This is the first step of any kind of trauma healing, right? Like, you're safe now, that's over, we're here, it's okay. Really learning to take that in and let your nervous system start to ground and settle. Then beginning to build capacity. So there was this event that had lots of energy that we couldn't tolerate or integrate because it was too much. So we need to start to rebuild capacity. And so that means, as this principle of rhythm, starting to explore a little bit of energy and then coming back to rest and safety, a little bit more energy and then coming back to rest and safety. So this is some of the principles of trauma healing that come from Peter Levine's work of somatic experiencing. So this is the second piece, is building capacity. And then the third piece is starting to open to and integrate the residues of intensity of that event. Another definition of trauma that I love: trauma is unintegrated resource. Take that in. Unintegrated resource. You got through it. You're here. That means that there is some amazing, intense strength, creativity, resource that allowed you or the subject of the trauma to get through it. But it hasn't been integrated. It hasn't been resolved and owned, both the resource and the intensity of the energy. So that's the third phase, is actually integrating some of the intensity of that energy that was present, both the challenge and also the strength that was called upon to meet it. This is often best done with support. This is something very difficult to do on one's own, because the trauma often happens relationally, if not with another human being, with the environment, like if it's a natural disaster or something. And so our nervous system has gotten scrambled and often needs the support of another nervous system to navigate those forces and find more balance. All right. Difference between feelings and emotions. Marita, very simple. Two ways of talking about it. One, in some contexts, the terms are synonymous. So like with my book, Say What You Mean, I use the terms feelings and emotions interchangeably to just refer to human emotions. So in some contexts, they mean the same thing. In a Buddhist context, often the word feeling refers to the agreeable or disagreeable nature of experience. It just means pleasant, unpleasant, or sort of neutral in the middle. And anything and everything can have this particular feeling tone, as it's sometimes referred to, a feeling tone, like, you know, oh, this tastes good, it's agreeable, it's bitter, I don't like it, it's disagreeable. It has a certain feeling quality to it. Emotions are the affective states of mind and body, happiness, sadness, grief, joy, that we experience. So those are two ways of defining them. There are other definitions. Some schools of psychology will say feelings are more primary and kind of hardwired, whereas emotions have more of a social and historical dimension to them. So there are different ways of defining it semantically. So then there's a couple of questions about chronic fatigue and energy. I'm just going to read these. Naomi learned how to keep energy quite balanced and steady on my own. Pair work, contemplation practice. How do I carry the steadiness and balance of energy into these interactions with those who are very much caught up in society's narratives of rushing and doing? Bearing in mind that my nervous system tends to mimic and respond to the energy of those around me. Yeah, awesome. Thank you, Naomi. So this is a very specific question, so I want to address it first, and then we'll see if we have time for one more after this. What I like about your question is it's touching on and highlighting an aspect of energy that I didn't talk about that I think is really important, which is the way our relationships affect us and the way other people's energy can have an influence on ours. So thank you. Thank you for that. I've found it's a real kind of training and practice to contain one's own energy system and not allow others to have undue influence over us without disconnecting or shutting the world out, right? So again, these two extremes, right? There's one extreme of being totally open and porous. And if someone's really lethargic and low energy and depressed, all of a sudden we start feeling so heavy and God, I can hardly move. Or if someone's like super amped up and like, you know, really, really wired, we're like, oh my God, I'm so wired. So one extreme is that too porous and anything kind of just infects us. The other extreme is that we disconnect. We're just so boundaried that it's hard to make contact with others. So what we're seeking here is the capacity to feel our own body and our own energy system and to develop a certain sense of integrity to that so that we can be in the presence of someone else and still maintain our own kind of like frequency energetically, if you will, without necessarily becoming entrained with their frequency, right? Like the way, like, so it's a little bit like harmonics in music that you can still have your own frequency and they can still have theirs, but there can be contact. They can interact with each other, but you don't have to shift yours to theirs. So that's the theory. That's the principle. How do we do it? Train your attention to notice your own energetic boundaries. So often that's like the skin boundary. Feel the large muscles of your body, the biceps, the chest, the quads and hamstrings, the glutes. That's one physical body, skin, muscles. Feel your feet on the ground and the weight of gravity. And then sense your own physical space. So energetic boundary around your body. You can begin to become aware of it and feel it. Put your attention down on the ground between you and the other person. Even if you're not looking there, in your own mind, sense the place on the ground around you where you feel your own personal space ending. And put your attention there. That's your boundary. This is mine, what's in here. That's yours, what's out there. Initially, for you, Naomi, because your tendency is to get swept up in their energy, you're going to need to emphasize that boundariedness more. It's going to feel like you're disconnecting because you're recalibrating. The tendency is too far in the other direction. Really emphasize that until you can start to feel that separateness. And then you can start to open more because you know how to do that already. Okay. I hope that's helpful. Okay. You referenced the flood of becoming. I find that many younger people under 40s struggle with this, myself included. I see us comparing ourselves regarding accomplishments. How would you suggest working with this? Kat, thank you. I love this, Kat. So essential. Otherwise, we spend our life chasing after something that doesn't really satisfy us and might not even be what we want. These are such great questions, and there's so much here. So how to respond to this in 2 minutes. Okay, so I think there are two things that have been really important for me around this, because this is definitely something that I've worked with a lot in my life. One, notice the stress of the becoming, the comparing, the trying to get, have, become. It's unpleasant. It's a kind of suffering. But when we're caught up in it, we don't notice it. Begin to notice the distress, the not good enough. When I get to, there's a friction, there's a dislocation of our sense of well-being inherent in becoming. Begin to notice that, because that will become a mindfulness bell for you and will become fuel, energy for learning to do it differently, because we don't like to suffer. That's one. Two, contemplate your own values. Why are you here? What do you care about? How do you want to live this life? What do you want to offer to the world? What do you want to bring into the conversations you have, to the moments of your life? Get really clear on that, and then move from there. Move from your own center and your own heart rather than what the world's telling you to do. Well, what a joy to be able to be here together. Thank you so much for your time and for your practice. So maybe we just end with a short dedication. Just touching into your heart, feeling the beauty and the goodness of this practice and our coming together. May any learning, any insight or benefit of our time together be offered and shared freely with all beings everywhere. May all beings awaken from their own ignorance. May all beings be happy and have the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and from the causes of suffering. May those suffering from the horror of war find safety and refuge. May those caught in the grip of violence and hatred find tenderness, compassion, and understanding. May all beings open their hearts to our shared vulnerability and work together to build a world of dignity and peace. Thank you so much for your practice. Hope to see you again. Take care, everyone.